When much of your city's water supply comes from one mountainside, it makes sense to protect that mountainside from catastrophic events that could affect water. That is the basic idea behind the Ashland Forest Resiliency Project, or AFR, as the people who know it best call it. The R is the key letter, making the forest more resilient over time. Let's get an update on how that is done and how the work is going. Two guests join us today. Carrie Metlin is a forest ecologist with the Nature Conservancy in Medford. Carrie, welcome back to the studio.
Thanks, Jeffrey. Glad to be here.
Good to have you. Marty Main is with us as well. He is with Small Woodland Service Incorporated and a contracting forester for the city of Ashland, has been for nearly two decades now. Marty, welcome to the studio.
Thanks, Jeff.
So let's get the thumbnail sketch first about how the Ashland Forest Resiliency Stewardship Project, I'm giving the full name now, how did it all get started? I mean, somebody at some point identified a need and said, we need to do this. So how did that all take shape?
I think we look back to 2003, 2004, Jeff. The community had an opportunity to develop a community alternative. The Forest Service gave us that opportunity, and the community embarked on a process of doing that work. And eventually, 2009, the Forest Service took a look at that project and said, yeah, sounds good, added some of their own analysis to it, and we started out with the process in 2009.
How similar or dissimilar is the Ashland Forest Resiliency Stewardship Project to anything else the Forest Service has had to pass approval on before?
I'd say it's a pretty unique endeavor for the Forest Service, having this level of community involvement, kind of a unique undertaking for them.
So since the Forest Service is involved, is most of the land then on Forest Service land? Is there some mixture of private, BLM, city, anything else in there?
There's really only two owners in the main body of the Ashland watershed. One is the Forest Service, and the city of Ashland owns about 650 acres. So only two owners in the watershed.
All right. Carrie Metlin?
One thing I'd like to point out, though, is that the very successful work, collaborative work that we've been doing in the Ashland watershed on Forest Service land has actually led to our ability to get some U.S. government money that has been funneled through the Nature Conservancy, and then through a program known as PERC Spur, accomplish more work, similar types of work, on City of Ashland land and also on some private land that butt up against it. So it's this example, the types of work that we'd like to be doing, has led to getting work done cross-boundary. So we think that's a big step forward.
So how many different partners are there all together? There's the City of Ashland, obviously the Nature Conservancy, City of Ashland's contracting forester. There's Loma Kotze Restoration is in there too. Who am I missing?
The primary partners in AFR are four, Forest Service, TNC, LRP, and COA.
Okay.
City of Ashland, Loma Kotze Forest Service, and the Nature Conservancy.
LRP is Loma Kotze Restoration Project. Yeah. Got it. Okay.
But then with some of this other work, we, of course, team up with private landowners that are that want to get that work done on their own land.
How big of an area are we talking about here? When we talk about the Ashland watershed, what are we talking about in acres?
So the municipal watershed itself is about 16,000 acres. But, of course, if you want to talk about mitigating fire behavior as it comes into that watershed, you don't want to just treat within the confines of that that area. So the project itself is actually 7,600 acres, lower down in the municipal watershed, and then spilling over into Neal Creek and Warner Creek drainages to help mitigate the impacts of a fire being delivered to the watershed.
So does this mean then that you're not just there's not just this hard boundary and boom, the treatments change at that boundary?
No, I wouldn't say that at all. Absolutely. We're trying to mitigate fire behavior across this landscape for a number of different values, municipal watershed being one of them, but protecting the old growth for the spotted owl and the Pacific fisher, protecting the big old legacy pine, Doug fir, madrone, black oak that are such a characteristic part of this watershed, and then, of course, recreational values for the trails up there that aren't all just in the municipal watershed. It's sort of a web.
Have these interests gotten to a point where, is there a competition between them in the sense that you know, if you help one value, you are denigrating another one? If you let the trees stand, well, then your scenic values drop. I guess that's not a huge one in there because you're really trying to protect what the land does. But, I mean, are there some trade-offs that get done up there, Marty May?
Absolutely, Jeff. It's been a challenge when you have multiple objectives all strongly felt and passionately by professionals and community members. But sure, not every acre of land is treated the same when you're dealing with fire or spotted owls or recreational use water delivery. So a lot of the work we do is try to adjust those values in a way that maximizes the results.
I liked what Marty said there, in that we're not accomplishing every objective on every acre. Instead, while we do have some trade-offs, it's really synergistic. While across this landscape, we're restoring some open habitats to protect the closed habitats. So in some parts of the landscape, we're removing more fuels and opening up the canopy more. Other parts of the landscape, we're leaving very dense as old-growth habitat. And as a result, we accomplish multiple objectives over the entire area, but not every objective on any one acre.
And I think, Jeff, one of the keys here is that over time, what we've found is that for resource management is that we need to look at bigger scales, landscape levels. We used to just look at stands and managing a small unit to achieve a value. Now we look at a much broader area, in fact, across areas outside of the watershed.
You were telling me before we came on the air, Marty, that you started Small Woodland Service, Inc. in 1980. So you've been at this for a long time, and I imagine there's been some really mind-blowing changes in the way that we approach forestry over that time.
Yeah, that's probably an understatement. Yeah. Yeah, it's when I first started, we really didn't have professionally or publicly the understanding of the role of fire and forest ecosystems. And we were really looking at achieving other values that were dictated by the public and by Congress. And fortunately, we've evolved to a little bit, particularly in places like the Ashland Watershed, looking at multiple values, particularly things like water, very important.
We were talking about the Ashland Forest Resiliency Stewardship Project, or AFR, as it's often known, for Ashland Forest Resiliency. It's treating the Ashland watershed slopes, the forest there, to make sure that catastrophic fires don't happen. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we discuss how it's carried out, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, and our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Let's jump again back to the beginning and talk about the very situation you're trying to prevent. If there were a large-scale fire that burned very hot through the Ashland watershed, we've seen a bunch of these in our area, been in places where fires burn through and pretty much sterilize the soil, what would that do to Ashland's water supply if that had happened?
The biggest, most direct, and most concerning impact would be a large delivery of sediment to the watershed, or to the reservoir, rather. And so that would have impacts, of course, on water quality. So that impacts the water that we drink. It impacts the turbidity and thus the salmon spawning grounds in Bear Creek. Then beyond the direct impact, then you also have a problem of filling in your reservoir with sediment, and that begins to be a multi-million-dollar investment then to mitigate those impacts. And so at that point, you're looking at a lot of dredging and doing something with that material. And then, of course, long-term rehabilitating the slopes, getting the vegetation back into the watershed so that you reduce your opportunity for sedimentation. And then, of course, all of the values that you've lost in addition to water. You've lost the big old trees. You've lost the wildlife habitat, and recreational opportunities would be severely impacted.
Are we talking slow sedimentation, or are we talking the possibility of a landslide if there'd been a huge fire up there?
Both.
Really? All right, so it could have been large scale or small scale.
Yeah.
And or both. Got it. So how long was the whole Forest Resiliency Stewardship Project supposed to take when it was first lined up and laid out?
Well, the NEPA was laid out for a 10-year window.
National Environmental Policy Act, so you had your planning documents and
absolutely.
All that stuff.
So, yeah, the original plan was for 10 years. And as we discussed earlier, that window started in 2009. But work really got kicked into gear with the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009. And so it took us about 3 years to spend down those monies. That got our 3,300 acres treated so far, and leaving us with about 3,600 acres more to get the work done moving forward and with alternative funding sources.
And so what have been some of the – essentially you're halfway through. Is it more or less on schedule, Marty Main?
Yeah, I think I'm actually quite happy to see us at this point, because we weren't certain where the funding was going to come from and how the work was going to be delivered. But to be where we're at this point in time is really a great stroke for the project and for the community.
What has been the hardest work, or what have been some of the surprises along the way, things that you didn't necessarily anticipate when you were in the planning process?
Well, you know, how we characterize a lot of the work we do nowadays is adaptive management, because we tend to evolve with projects more in this era than set them up and just implement. And in this situation, it was really important to involve ourselves with the community to find the public and social acceptance of the work we're doing. So I think Carrie said it earlier. I think the level of support we've got within the community of Ashland has been really, really great and commendable. And that's been a surprise to see that level. When I first started, we didn't have that level of support initially.
Why? Because you were taking some trees out of the watershed?
Well, I'm thinking more in my career of working on other parcels, not so much in the Ashland watershed. Mm-hmm. The first time we really started working directly in the watershed on city lands was in the late 90s. And so we were developing the public acceptance as we moved along there.
I noticed that last week, for example, when there was some burning going on up in the watershed, that the signs go out in front of the firehouse. There's an open burn going on today. Tune your radio to this position on the AM dial to get further information, and a recording plays through and explains the burning process. It seems like when the project was probably pretty new, you got a lot of phone calls, or somebody got a lot of phone calls anyway, about the smoke rising from the Ashland watershed. Have people gotten used to that process now?
Yeah, I think over time, you know, as it became more apparent that we needed to reduce the fuels and reduce it in a sensible way, then folks got used to seeing the fire on the hill and the smoke rising. And we work really hard to try to produce smoke that will go outside the valley, not into Ashland. And that's been ongoing for 15 years.
We get asked all the time why things can't be just left to decay upon the land, why they have to be burned. Carrie.
I'd love to answer that. So the important thing I want to point out, first of all, is that decay and that natural process of replenishing the soil is absolutely critical. And we are in no way trying to say that that doesn't have a role. But these are frequent fire systems that historically our research is showing at a given site in the Ashland watershed would have burned every 9 years. Okay, so these are very frequent fire systems. There are also fire systems where it's extremely difficult to control fire in all circumstances. So what we need to do is prepare ourselves to deal with fire when it happens, and the certainty that it will happen in the Ashland watershed. And we need to be modifying the likely outcomes when that does occur. And in order to do that, and in order to be more in tune with the historic range of variability and how fire would behave in that watershed, we have to reduce some of the fuels that have accumulated with 100 years of fire suppression.
So will there be fires every 9 years? Will you set fires on a regular interval once the project is completed to make sure that the forest is doing what it's supposed to be doing?
You touch on a really important factor there, Jeffrey, and that is that what we're doing now is setting the stage with an initial entry to then manage this land more efficiently and more cost-effectively with fire. And what that would mean is, yes, broadcast underburns, which are lit under weather conditions of our choosing, where we can reduce the fuels, reintroduce natural processes, and it wouldn't necessarily be on every 9-year scheduling, but a more frequent interval than that which we have observed to date.
So an as-needed kind of situation.
Absolutely.
Have had some dry years, obviously, in the watershed since the work started in 2009. Has that presented some changes along the way in how you approach the original prescriptions for how you treat the land? In other words, is anything about the way the climate has responded in the last couple of years forced changes upon what you're doing?
Well, I think we have to, as implementers, we really have to be pretty responsive to the current climate or the weather. Some years where it's really dry, this year is one, we have difficulty perhaps doing the level of burning that we'd like to, because we're always concerned, of course, about the potential for fire moving outside of our prescribed areas. So, yeah, weather's very important. This year with a drought, we have an elevated likelihood that we'll have insects involved on our conifers. So, you know, climate is a real major impact on what we can do, and we have to be responsive to it.
At this point, are you guys getting any requests from other places for the book on what you've done? I mean, are you getting inquiries from other parts of the country, from people saying, hey, we want to see what you did. Can you tell us how to do it here?
Absolutely. And actually, the Ashland Watershed is a demonstration site for the Nature Conservancy. It's one of 15 demo sites where we're basically trying to figure out what are the best ways of growing a collaborative process and getting this work done at a scale and with the quality that accomplishes the needed objectives of resiliency and resistance to wildfire.
Almost out of time. Anytime soon, will there be more burning going on? Is there another plan soon?
As soon as possible. Yeah. We have a couple thousand acres of pile burns that need to be treated.
All right. So pretty much throughout the spring, assuming the weather doesn't get too dry.
Right.
Got it. Marty Main is with Small Woodland Service Incorporated. He's the contracting forester for the city of Ashland. Carrie Metlin is the forest ecologist with the Nature Conservancy in Medford. All partners on the Ashland Forest Resiliency Stewardship Project. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us once again on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
Bottom of the hour on the exchange. Here's Garrison Keillor.